You know, at the last church I was at, where I was a pastor, I did a lot of what they call youth ministry. So I worked with teenagers in the church, in the community. We had a fairly decent-sized group. But there was one thing, a pet peeve, it was something that drove me nuts, and it still kind of gets me today. It is the chaos and danger that I would see when it looked like no one was in charge of the inmates. And I didn't let it happen if I could help it, but what I would love to do is I'd love to bring kids on a trip to a missions trip or a work trip, or we would do what we're going to do at this church. We'd invite people to show up at the food pantry like we are on Saturday morning. It is just so great for especially kids to get involved and make a difference and get some exposure to different needs. I loved that part, but the thing that drove me sort of nuts is when I would take a group of sort of rowdy kids to a work site, and instead of the kids having something to do, the people who were in charge, instead of being organized and giving the kids assignments, what drives me crazy is when the mission site leader would not have any sort of plan. Instead of, here's a plan, here's supplies, I'm not going to complain more than I have to. But I would get to some of these places, and the people in charge of like a food pantry would see 60 kids and give us nothing to do. It'd drive me nuts. And they'd go, hey, you guys just hang on for a little bit. I got to make some phone calls and disappear. And look, friends, I know it's not in the Bible, but it's true. Idle hands are the devil's, tell me. It's true. Like, it's crazy. I had rough kids, right? So they really needed something to do with their hands. So, man, I still have, like, flashbacks. It's just me. This is my own, like, hang-up. I got to get over it. But even today, I'll go to some sort of kids event, and if it's a little bit chaotic, I got PTSD or something from working with the craziest unsupervised teens. But I'm not even kidding. Back then, If I gave these kids, like, there's a parking lot, weed it, they're fantastic. Here's a couple tons of food, unload it, the best kids. But as soon as they're bored, like, it was, man, awful. There they are, like, making out, dealing drugs, stabbing people. Like, seriously, all those things happen. So to this day, I feel better about life when someone has a plan, there's rules, no chaos. And maybe deep down, I still worry about a rebellion of teenage kids or something. But I thought when I came here and I became a senior pastor, I would never have that feeling again of worrying about chaos breaking out. But I was wrong, because I blame you people. I took on that vice that a lot of you have taken up. Occasionally, I don't want to admit it, but sometimes I follow the news. And if you think that unsupervised teens can be the devil's playground, you would not believe what people in government are like. Like, if idle teenage hands are the devil's playground, I don't even know what sort of amusement park do you call bored rich people in private jets, but to me, it seems worse. And honestly, there's a part of me that just gravitates toward the entertainment value of all the headlines. I have to push against it a bit, and I work hard at you. Like, some of you will talk about what's going on in politics, and I'll just say, I have no idea, because I have no idea. It's just bad for my soul sometimes to get wrapped into all the 24-hour news headlines that are just generated to make me click on stuff. It's just not good for me personally. But it's not good for me because I get a little upset. And I'm not the only one, I think. I've observed that a lot of people, when it seems like the world is unsupervised and chaos and going in bad directions, it like messes us up. And I know this because I talked to some of you, and some of you are a little messed up. You've got anxiety and fear and worry, not about stuff that's happening to you, but about stuff you're watching on TV or online, global, powerful trends. And I know, we're in democracy. We have the responsibility to vote and do that. Like, please take that responsibility seriously. Like, don't bury your head in the sand. But I think a lot of us carry the weight of the world on our shoulders, and we cannot deal. So we get consumed by fears of an unsupervised world. Like, I'll talk to some of you, and you've got the demeanor that your dog just died. And I'll go, like, what happened? Who died? And you'll say, do you know what one of our politicians said? And I don't. and I'm a little bit happier for it. But here's my big point. Worrying about powerful people drives sometimes people of faith to despair. And this happens to all of us. How many of us get anxious and depressed because the whole world seems like unsupervised teenagers are messing things up? Like no one's in charge, or the people in charge are the worst people. And we worry about ourselves, we worry about the next generation because it feels like the worst people are making the worst decisions. If you've ever felt like that, and I could tell some of you are looking anxious already that you felt this, let me just tell you what we're doing this morning. I want you to hear God's perspective on a chaos, rebellious world. I want you to hear how God responds to all the evil, powerful plots. This morning we're looking at Psalm 2, and it starts off with a familiar question that you've asked. The psalmist is as if you were watching the news, scrolling the headlines, starting to get a little depressed, asking why. Here's what the psalm says, why? Why do the nations conspire? Why do the peoples plot? Like, why are things so messed up, the psalmist asked. You've asked this question too. This is a question about what worries you when you watch the news. This is all the reasons you're anxious about the present or the future. You worry about you, your kids, your grandkids. This is all the worries you have about the country, civilization, the world. And he expands. The psalmist just goes, look, here's what I'm seeing. There's kings of the earth, and they're rising up. The rulers band together, and they're all against the Lord and against his anointed, and they're saying, let us break their chains and throw off their shackles. Now, I have to translate this a little bit. I'm not recommending the 24-hour news cycle, but let's just be honest. There's always been terrifying news. This is a scene from 3,000 years ago, and it is as fresh as today. Here's a complaint. Basically, kings, rulers, it's short term for powerful people. You'd call them celebrities, billionaires, oligarchs, nationalists, globalists, whatever. Back then, they just had kings and rulers. These are people with agency, powerful people with agency. And powerful people in these verses are rising up against God's people, God's values, God himself. They are departing from morality and justice. If you read the prophets, these are powerful people who don't value human life. And I'll just point out, this gets a little bit lost in some of the language, but for the psalmist, kings rebelling against God is more complicated than just being atheist or not going to church or something. In the Bible, morality and ethics are revealed in three ways. You've got prophets, you've got written text, and you've got the theological term, common grace. You should know that people, humans, made in the image of God, and that's everybody, people who believe in God, people who don't believe in God, they've all got the image of God with an internal God-given sense of right and wrong. Like, you don't have to be a Christian to think you shouldn't murder people. You shouldn't have to be a Christian to think you shouldn't steal or lie. And the problem is sometimes even that God-given conscience is seen as a chain, a shackle. That part of being made in God's image has you've got a sense of God's rules. Which, by the way, I'll say something nice. This explains why some of the nicest people you'll meet are people who are faithless. Why do people who don't read the Ten Commandments think that murder is wrong? Well, it's because God's image still nudges people. Even people who don't believe in the Bible, God's voice constrains people from evil and nudges toward good. Which is, again, that's why you find lots of people who don't believe the Bible also think murder is wrong. It's why people who don't go to church still tell the truth and don't like stealing. Is because God gave us a sense of what's right and wrong. And the complaint the psalmist has is that people who are powerful are rebelling, not from prophets or the Bible, but from, I think, general revelation. They're going, I am not going to listen to that God-given ethical voice inside of me that's preventing me from doing what I want to. Loving my neighbors is a chain. being unselfish is a shackle and is holding me back, is oppressing me. So in a text, people who are powerful going, the worst people, are going, God, you know, what if I change my ethics about murder a bit, right? What if I change what I think about stealing? What if I became selfish and unethical? What if I just stopped caring about people? I think that's what's going on here, and that's the complaint. And if you're someone who is, you're hanging on because people in society generally are ethical and kind, a rebellion against God is a nightmare. When powerful people all of a sudden don't value human life, when they don't value ethics or character, when people who seem to be in control shake their hand at God and say, you know, my conscience is telling me one thing, but I'm going to do what I want. These words are 3,000 years old, but they could have been from yesterday. And it's terrifying, because unless you're one of the powerful rulers or king who is mowing over everybody with a bus or something, you're going to be under the bus. What could happen to you? And we've got answers. Like it keeps going. You could all tell stories from ancient history or modern history, from the Bible. We see lots of stories of what happens when kings, rulers, powerful people rebel against God's rule to hurt other people. And you tell stories about, this is probably being read during the exile, so think about the story of Esther from last week, or, you know, think about Nebuchadnezzar, think about God's people being thrown to lions or in fiery furnaces or being kidnapped, or the whole story of the exile, God's people being kidnapped, having all their stuff stolen. Like, this isn't abstract. This isn't a impossible news headline from far away. This is, in the Bible, this is happening. Evil, powerful people ignore their consciences, go against the word of God, do evil things, seem to get what they want, and evil people or good people are suffering. And we've all worried about this, right? Who among us haven't worried about powerful people, groups, or trends? Like, all of us have, right? You know what it's like. You stay up at night, you get angry, depressed, you go into fight or flight, it may isolate you, you may just go to despair, you may try and escape in any number of ways from the awfulness that these verses represent. And when you think about God, like if you're really thinking about this, you might imagine God is not caring about what's happening. You imagine, like maybe God, like this is what happened during the exile, people thought maybe God is intimidated by modern trends of 3,000 years ago, is what everyone was thinking. What is God doing? The one who is enthroned in heaven, what is he? Is he powerless? Is he afraid? Does he not care? Is he indifferent? Is the one enthroned in heaven disappointed that things didn't work out? The psalmist actually answers that. You know what God does? You might be surprised at what the next verse says. You might even be offended, but here's what the psalm says. The one enthroned in heaven, see what God does? Someone tell me what God does. He laughs. God isn't panicking about the headlines. God isn't worried about politicians or riots or wars or losing your notes or whatever. Like, God is not panicking here. God isn't trying to renegotiate his promises. You know I said I'd protect you, right? But, you know, I didn't know about social media. Like, God isn't doing that, right? God is not nervous about threats. God isn't afraid. God isn't worried. Look, see what God is doing? God just laughs. And if you're offended, I just want to be really clear about what the psalm says, about who God's laughing at. Like, this is great. Now we can finish the message. You guys are all good. In the psalm, God isn't laughing at the people who are worried. Maybe you should, right? Maybe we worry a little bit too much. The text says the Lord laughs at them, right? God laughs, not at people who are worried, but God is laughing at all the giant, powerful people that make us nervous. God is looking at your Nebuchadnezzars, looks at your Belteshazzars, looks at the politicians that we worry about, and see what God does? He laughs at the absurdity of created people shaking their little tiny fists at God in heaven. And see what God does? He rebukes them in his anger, terrifies them in his wrath. And if I were writing the Bible, the next verse I would want to write would be an elaboration on God terrifying bad people. I would want to write an elaboration on anger and wrath. I'd want something like, something that sounds violent. I'd want to write something like, God laughs as he sends his army. God laughs before he strikes them with lightning bolts. God just laughs at dictators and, you know, they get into a car accident or cancer. Tyrants don't live forever is what I would write about Nebuchadnezzar or whoever. But look at what God says next. As he's laughing, it's kind of shocking what he says. Here's why God laughs at the absurdity of powerful, evil people. He says, I have installed my king on Zion, my holy mountain. I'll proclaim the Lord's decree. He said to me, this is the person who's speaking the psalm, you are my son, today I become your father. Ask me, and I will make the nations your inheritance, the ends of the earth your possession. You will break them with a rod of iron. You will dash them to pieces like pottery. There's something interesting here. God pivots unexpectedly from God's wrath on chaos to talking about God having a son. It's a weird shift because talking about the Almighty, and then it switches to the one God's talking to, God's son. And the first readers of the psalm 3,000 years ago read this as about a king sitting on David's throne. Like David, a warrior, like God, brings justice through victory. Now, if you're reading this during the exile, if you're Esther or if you're Daniel or if you're Ezra, you're reading this and you picture a king just like King David. You're imagining, you know, there's kings, there's rulers, but they haven't heard about David with a slingshot, right? There's this guy who's going to be king, and he's going to defeat the Philistines again, and good people are going to prosper again, and bad people get punished again. And for hundreds of years, God's people waited for another king. The thing is, King David died, and instead of his sons being more and more like God, they became more and more like the rulers and kings of the world. For 1,000 years, the rulers of Israel became more like the Babylonians and the Philistines than like God's kids. And for 1,000 years, there's a downward trajectory. And all that came to a stop about 40 days after the resurrection of Jesus. Because what the New Testament does is it takes this exact psalm about evil rulers winning and God laughing and says this whole story here isn't just about David and God's people in the exile. This is not a story about Solomon. This is not about another king who has an army and lives and dies. The New Testament says this psalm is about Jesus. And all of the promises that God will bring justice is fulfilled in Jesus Christ. Let me make this clear. This is a sermon. It's given in Acts by the apostles. I'll just read it to you. The apostles are preaching. They say, we tell you the good news. Here it is. What God promised our ancestors 1,000 years before, God has fulfilled for us, their children, by raising up Jesus. If you're asking what promise, what good news is fulfilled, and the apostle says, well, open up to Psalm chapter 2, which says, you are my son, I become your father. And then he adds, God raised Jesus from the dead so that he will never be subject to decay, as God says, I will give you the holy and sure blessings promised to David. Do you know why God laughs? You know why he just chuckles at the notion that the tiny fists of mighty men will win. In Psalm 2, God laughs because Jesus rose from the dead. Jesus rose from the dead. How can an enemy like death be threatening if God defeats it? I mean, Jesus made the whole world. What exists that can threaten him? Jesus rules the world. What can rebel against his justice, goodness, and love? I mean, the very idea is laughable. And that's exactly what God does. Today we celebrate the ascension. God rose Jesus from the dead. 40 days later, he ascended into heaven. And that is why none of us have to fear about world events. Jesus is king is why you don't have to carry the heavy crown of ruling the nations, because you were never designed for that kind of stress. Jesus carries the weight of the world on his shoulders. And to be clear, don't bury your head in the sand. Be a good steward, vote, all those things. Be a good leader, help your community become better. But what you don't do is ever give into the fear or anxiety that the world is unruled. Because God rules. And Jesus is king. The next question you're going to ask, if God just laughs and you don't have to despair when it seems like evil's winning, what do you do? And what's really easy is to be anxious. We've all done that. You could be indifferent. You could be upset. But what should we be? I mean, that's a big question. I mean, think of how much of the average person's mental bandwidth is worried about all the chaos. What if you could take all that energy to do something? And if that thing is, well, it's not supposed to be fear, if not supposed to be indifference, if you're not supposed to be angry, what do you do? Well, the psalm answers that question. Instead of apathy or anxiety or anger, look at what the text tells us to do. Therefore, because that's true. Therefore, you kings, be wise. Be warned, you rulers of the earth. In the ancient Near East, there's two categories of people. There are people that have agency, and there's people that obey those other people. There were kings and commoners. And I'm just going to make this point. In America in 2024, everybody in this room is more like a king than a common person. You all have agency. You all have things you can do. And compared to history and the world, we're all rich. But if you've ever eaten food out of season, if you've ever traveled for pleasure, if you have clothes that are more than one different color, like you have it better off than the king. So I think this is a message to us. What should you be? Well, kings. What does it say? Kings be what? Wise. Show wisdom. Your daily decisions ought to be lived after the therefore, that God is in charge and he's going to bring justice. So be wise. What else? Be warned, it says, right? Like all this life isn't forever. Our life is like a vapor. It's a breath. It's like the dandelion that blooms and gets blown out by kids at the preschool. One day, after this short life is done, you will get judged on what you do with what you have. So be wise, be warned. One more thing, I think this summarizes the next couple verses. Take God seriously. Worship. Serve the Lord with fear. Celebrate his rule with trembling. Kiss the Son or he'll be angry and your way will lead to your destruction. For his wrath can flare up in a moment. I think he summarizes like this. Be wise, be warned, and worship. You know what happens when you do those three things? Read the last line. Blessed are all those who, instead of getting worried about what's going on, instead of running away, instead of escaping or fighting, find refuge in him, and you find blessing. Here's what I think God's telling us today. Next time you gravitate toward despair because they're getting it away with again, next time you feel like your emotions are upset because of whatever that's going on in Washington, Israel, Ukraine, India, Sudan. I could keep naming countries for a while. We could talk about places much, much closer to home. But next time you start to despair, know this. Jesus still sits on the throne. So be wise, be warned, and worshiped. I don't think I can give a much better summary than the last verse of "This is my Father's world." Think about these words. The hymn goes, "This is my Father's world. Oh, let me never forget," because we forget, right? Like, it's my Father's world. And the hymn goes, "That though the wrong seems oft so strong, God is the ruler yet. This is my Father's world. Why should my heart be sad? Because the Lord is king. Let the heavens ring, God reigns. Let the earth be glad." This week we celebrate the ascension of Jesus Christ. And I believe that God is telling us today to remember that Jesus is king. So be wise, be warned, and worship. Now, if you're not a Christian, if you're not sure what any of this means, I'm glad you're here. We'd love to talk to you about Jesus, that the one who died, rose, and ascends, loves us, and he could change your life. But for all of us, no matter where you are in your faith journey, I want you to imagine how different your life, how different your mental health could be, how much more energy you could have if every time you heard the bad headlines, what if instead of despairing, what if you could actually walk more confidently in Jesus? Can you imagine if you could use all the energy we spend talking and fretting about kings and rulers, if we'd use all that energy for something productive? Imagine how, well, think about all the people around us who are messed up and going through difficult things because they don't have a firm foundation. I don't know exactly what it looked like to take all the energy and use it to following the Lord, but I think that if you could do that, you'd have more energy, you'd have more grit. We would make our community a better place if we could live out what it means that Jesus is King. Let's pray. Father in heaven, my prayer is that we would give you all the glory, all the laud, all the honor. Give us the vision to see that even when powerful people seem to win, when the wrong seems oft so strong, help us to remember that you, O Lord, still rule and reign. Father, I pray that you would give us rest from our anxieties and our fears and our worries. Give us the wisdom to know how to act. And give us the confidence to trust you when things seem difficult. Father, can we follow you? Can you give us the creativity to use what we have well? And we ask you to give us a strong faith that helps us to go forward. We ask all this in the name of King Jesus. Amen.